that he was standing straight, or as straight as he could. Claire had put him in one of her old hippie shirts, loose and flowy and painter's smocky, which was enormous on him, so all I could see was a head and some teal-colored toes. I supposed it was a miracle that he was getting around at all, but the posture looked uncomfortable. I wondered why... Oh, that was why. The big eyes moved to my bedside table, and mine followed, and showed me that I'd had an earlier visitor in the form of my roommate, who knew a little about Domfeer metabolism and liked to feed people. She'd loaded me up, probably because food had a tendency to disappear if left in the kitchen. As a result, I had three whole sandwiches waiting for me. I slowly reached out a hand and took one, a nice, fat BLT, because Claire understands that the B is the most important part. Thick-cut, peppery B, complemented by her own homemade bread and vine-ripened tomatoes and bacon jam and... I heard my stomach grumble, and be echoed a second later by a similar sound from under Claire's smock of a shirt. My visitor was hungry, too. I held out the sandwich. "It's okay," I said. "You can have it." The little troll didn't move. But he didn't run away either, although his eyes kept flicking from the sandwich to me to the door, over and over. He was obviously frightened, but also hungry, but also frightened. It was an impasse. I decided to help him out and put the sandwich platter on the foot of the bed, pushing it as close to him as I could without getting up, which I somehow knew would spook him. Then I sat back against the headboard and ate my own sandwich, because it smelled like heaven. He watched me for a moment, eyes huge. And then, faster than I would have expected, almost faster than I could see, he grabbed the remaining two sandwiches and fled, practically knocking Claire over in the process. She'd been coming in the door with some laundry and had to do an acrobatic maneuver to avoid getting mowed down.
"What the... Hey! What are you..."
But the kid and his loot were already gone. Claire stared after him for a moment, and then turned to me, astonishment on her features.
"He's walking."
"He's running around stealing sandwiches," I corrected. "Good ones, too." I licked bacon grease off my fingers.
"He's supposed to be in bed."
"Put a platter of sandwiches beside it. He'll never leave." Claire blinked, considering that. Then she put down the laundry basket and went out again. I heard her talking to Gessa, and I guess they sorted it out because she was back a moment later. She started putting towels away while I hauled my stiff-as-fuck body out of bed.
"I'm surprised Bulsey risked coming in here," she told me from the bathroom. "He's really skittish."
"Bulsey? Is that his name?" Claire nodded.
"He woke up briefly yesterday. I managed to get some soup down him and a little medicine before he passed out again. He and Olga talked while I fed him."
"Did he remember anything about those mystery words?" Claire looked confused for a moment and then shook her head.
"He was barely conscious. They did a number on him, Dory."
"Yeah, I remembered, and felt my face flush in anger, which was stupid. The slavers didn't care about wiping out whole villages of Fae. How much less would they care about a single child?"
"I don't think he trusts anyone right now," Claire said. "She was lucky to get his name, although she isn't too happy about it."
"Olga isn't?" She nodded. "Why not? What's wrong with... What was it again?"
"Bulsey. It means wart."
"What?" Claire came out of the bathroom, having loaded me up with fresh-smelling towels.
"Or lump, or bump, or protrusion. It's what his owner called him. Anyway, it doesn't matter. We're not keeping it."
"The name or the kid?"
"Don't look at me like that,"
she told me severely. I'd hobbled over to the dresser for something to wear, so hadn't been looking like anything. I glanced over my shoulder.
"Like what?" I'm not adopting him. We can't have any more house guests or this place is gonna pop.
Couldn't argue with that.
Anyway, Olga is trying to find his people, but it's not easy. She said his dialect is really strange. He might be from one of the mountain tribes. With all the fighting, a lot of groups went to the hills over the centuries, and some never came down again.
So how do we find them? Claire didn't immediately answer, being busy staring at my rumpled mess of a bed, and a few bloodstains here and there, from where I guess I'd bled through my dressing. I felt around under it now and found a ridge of puckered skin, but no bullet hole. Sometimes I love Domphir metabolism. I can do that, I said, as Claire started stripping sheets, but she shook her head. Housework is how Claire works off excess energy. She sometimes complains about it, but if you try to take over, as I have plenty of times, she gets upset. Unless she gets to boss you doing it, of course.
Pillowcases, she instructed.
I blinked at her.
They're in the bathroom closet, third shelf.
Really? Who knew? I put down some old jeans and moved to oblige.
I'm not sure, she told me, answering my previous question. Olga has been talking to the other slaves, trying to find out about her nephew. And she's also been asking about the boy.
She stopped abruptly.
What do you think of Kjeld?
Kjeld?
As a name.
I handed over pillowcases.
It's all right. Why? Well, Bolsey needs a new one, and there's not a lot to choose from. Most of the Fae names, boys' ones anyway, are all about war. It's all fighter with helmet, or warrior in armor, or spear of God. And Olga says he'll probably never be a fighter, so a name like that would just make people laugh at him.
There's other things in life than fighting, I pointed out, and got an incredulous look from Claire.
I do other things. Name one. I paint. I play a mean hand of poker.
I thought about it.
I know how to tango. Well, maybe you should teach the Fae, Claire said,
dumping my rumpled sheets into her now empty basket and putting on new ones.
They're obsessed. Even the stuff that isn't war-related is usually designed to strike fear into their enemies by reminding them of scary stuff. I like Calder, for example, but it means harsh and cold waters. Who would want to be called that?
I agreed that Calder was a no-no.
And then there's nicknames, although they aren't any better.
Nicknames?
You know how the Fae are. Everybody has a dozen different names. But apparently, other people are supposed to give them to you. You aren't allowed to just name yourself.
I shrugged. So name him.
I would, but there's all these rules. Even nicknames are supposed to say something about you. I asked the guards for recommendations, and you know what they came up with?
No idea.
Ian McGree, the thin one. Or Offthegan, the unwashed.
Claire looked indignant.
He's not unwashed. I bathed him just yesterday. Or even worse, Rotin, the broken. I mean, can you imagine?
Some of the guards are pricks, I agreed. Claire gave me a sideways look.
They have one for you, too, you know.
A nickname?
She nodded. They're calling you Mbofthi. It means two-headed. I guess because of you and, you know.
I blinked. I wasn't sure how to feel about that.
They say it's an honor, that all warriors have a string of nicknames telling their story.
She sighed.
They're probably going to give you more.
Good, I decided.
Good?
Then I can bore them with all my names just like they do me. Claire laughed.
They'll probably enjoy it. If you stay still long enough, they'll tell you all about how they got each of their names and ask about yours. You can be trapped for hours.
Okay, that was slightly alarming.
So anyway, back to Kjeld. Do you like it?
What does it mean? She spread out some wrinkles in the sheets.
Large pot.
I grinned.
Well, trolls like to eat, and a large pot of whatever means you aren't likely to starve, and you can even feast others.
Sounds good to me. Or you could just ask him what he wants to be called. She shook her head.
I can't. He speaks almost no English, and even Olga can barely understand his dialect. But he'll be around a little while recovering, and I refuse to call him Wart the whole time.
I laughed. I couldn't help it. I had a kid named Stinky.
Anyway, word is that the mountain tribes have been hit hard by the slavers because they're usually small groups and too weak to fight back. But there's a lot of them, and they're spread over a large area, and sometimes they war with each other and... She sighed. It's a mess. And with the little one's condition, even if Olga does find his people, they may not claim him.
So what happens then?
I don't know.
She fluffed pillows.
He's very sweet, though.
More fluffing.
He liked my soup.
I didn't say anything. I wasn't stupid. I was seriously stiff, though. It felt like the years were finally catching up to me. A lot of years, I thought uncomfortably. All the freaking years. Until I stretched and, oh, my God. Oh, yeah. Oh, fuck yeah. Claire was looking at me in sudden alarm.
Did you just crack every bone in your spine?
Yeah. It felt so good that I did it again, and then rolled my neck around, hearing what sounded like miniature fireworks going off.
How do you do that?
She looked disturbed. I extended my arms, laced my fingers together, and cracked my knuckles. Like that?
Stop it!
I laughed and contemplated chasing her around the room, cracking things at her. But that might impact the chance of breakfast, and I was out of sandwiches.
Food?
I asked hopefully.
Get a shower. I'll have something for you by the time you're done.
That, I decided, was a plan. 20 minutes later, I was clean, moisturized, and dressed. But not downstairs, because Claire had a tray waiting for me when I emerged from the bathroom. She'd also brought a chair for herself. Uh-oh. Not that I wasn't happy to have company, but Claire wasn't a big fan of bedroom eating. If this was a normal conversation, we'd be having it at the kitchen table. So it wasn't going to be normal, and judging by the closed door, she didn't want it overheard. Well, crap.
Relax, she told me. I just want to fill you in.
You want to fill me in? I ambled over to the spread on the spread. I thought that was my job.
Luis Cesar brought you home. He told me what...
A phone rang. She sighed, pulled it out of a pocket, rolled her eyes, and put it back. What was that?
Nothing. Sit down and have breakfast. Or lunch, I suppose.
Lunch? Shouldn't it be dinner? Which is how I found out that I'd slept the clock around.
Shit!
I was halfway to my feet when Claire pulled me back down.
Sit. Eat. Listen.
Which is how I also found out some other things. So that's why we're talking behind closed doors, I said. I was looking at a newspaper pic of Blue's latest activities. It showed an illegal market in some abandoned subway station. It didn't specialize in the fae, per se, but in forbidden ingredients, the kind of stuff you couldn't walk into a normal potion shop and buy. But some of those did originate in fae. Need a basilisk's egg for an unbreakable ward? Gotcha, fam. Want kelpie blood for detection-proof glamouries? Step right up. How about naga venom for a poison no antidote can treat? Sure, for a price. It was exactly the sort of place where you'd expect to find fae bones and the fae supplying them. because butchering a bunch of helpless slaves is safer than constantly going into ferry, isn't it? Or it was. Until things suddenly got a lot bluer. All that was left now were broken cages and blood. Enough of the latter that I was assuming slavers number 4 and 5 had just bitten the dust, along with probably a bunch of their crew. What a pity. Claire nodded.
If all this gets out, when it gets out, nobody knows what will happen. But that, she fluttered a hand at the paper, will probably get a lot more common.
I understand why Olga felt she had to tell the elders, I said. This affects the whole Dark Fae community. I just wish she could have held off for a few days, until we know a little more. We don't need riots.
Oh, there will be riots, you can count on it.
I looked up.
You think it'll be that bad? The Troll Council does. That's why they're meeting now, to try to figure out how to spin it. But that's just it, there's no way. The Dark Fae believe that these weapons are powered by the souls of their people, souls that will never again be able to reincarnate. You can't spin that.
She got up and started pacing.
And the worst thing is, it's not just some crazy superstition. Luis Azar said it had some truth to it.
She turned and put her hands flat on the bed.
He can't be right, can he? Tell me he isn't right.
I don't know, I admitted. But Mircha confirmed that it was life energy. Vamps can tell the difference between that and regular magic. And there was plenty of it floating around after the console almost got incinerated.
I don't believe it.
She abruptly sat back down on her chair.
I don't believe it.
She did, though. The green eyes had just gone incandescent.
They're killing us. And Fairy.
She cut off, and then just sat there for a moment, trying to absorb the implications. Because, yeah, there were a lot of them. If Cademan was right about the symbiosis between Fairy and its people, then whoever was making these weapons wasn't just using up the souls of individuals, but draining that of their entire world. Might explain why there were fewer Vargar being born these days, I thought. And then I wondered how many more traits had been lost, how many more vital ways Fairy had been diminished. I also wondered what had happened to all those souls that had been left behind through the years, but not used up. If the bones deteriorated enough, were they lost too? Just dissipating into the ground of an alien world and fading away? I shivered, despite the warmth of the day and the residual heat of a very hot shower. How long had Fairy been bleeding out? Centuries? Millennia? Because it had to be that long, right? Ever since our two worlds encountered each other, and people started going back and forth. And while the Light Fae seemed to have a policy of taking their dead back with them, what about the Dark? They might have done it if left to their own devices, but they hadn't been. Not those who had been used as slaves and killed for sport. And if what Cademan said was true, the soul of a Dark Fae this incarnation might be that of a Light Fae the next, so every group was hurt, every group weakened. It was kind of stunning, and appalling, which probably explained why Claire looked sick as well as furious.
They should string her up publicly, said my pacifist roommate. That bitch!
You mean Afridus?
Of course I mean Afridus! Who else?
And there it was. The thing I'd been contemplating in the shower while my groggy brain woke up. The thing I'd been hoping to avoid, because I knew how this was going to go. I didn't say anything for a moment, because I am a coward. And then I sighed and womaned the hell up. Erm. Chapter 52. Claire spun around because she knows me too.
What?
I licked my lips, and not just because there was jam on them. She had that weird elfin thing going on suddenly, with the too translucent skin
and the hair color not found in nature. Not outside of a bonfire, anyway. And the two bright eyes. I tried telling myself it was just the light streaming through my shears, but I knew I was lying. I had a theory about it, too. I didn't know if I looked any different when Dorina was around, except for a weird, glowy eye thing I'd glimpsed once and tried not to think about. But I suspected that Claire's looks changed when her twin was awake, which meant that she was awake right now, making this not the time for this particular conversation. But as usual, with my luck, it was already too late.
"You are not going to tell me that you still don't think it was her," Claire demanded.
"Yeah, well, that would certainly be easier."
"Dory!"
"Look, I would love for Efreidis to be guilty, okay? She's a threat, if not now, then later, and it would make things nice and tidy since she's already in custody."
"As she ought to be."
"But what I want is less important than the facts, and I'm sorry, but they just don't fit."
"What facts?"
I held up a buttery finger. 1. Efreidis is a well-known Vargr, and she wants Aiden dead. Neither of these things is a secret. Yet she uses her best-known skill to attack us and does it when her brother is here, who will almost certainly recognize it and possibly recognize her. Claire frowned.
"She might not have known Cademan was here. It wasn't a planned visit, and he only arrived that afternoon."
"And stayed outside most of the day," I reminded her, "where any little passing birdie could have seen him. Unless she's a complete idiot, she'd do some recon before the attack, and Cademan is hard to miss."
"But she used the Manlikins first. She only came in herself after that didn't work."
I nodded. "And the Manlikin part I can understand. It could have been blamed on Easlin. It's his element, after all, and he hates Cademan. Killing his rival's heir would give him revenge on an old enemy, and might make Cademan less likely to support the Senate in the war. The Fae lead their armies, and Cademan would be less willing to risk himself without an heir." She frowned.
"So you think it was Easlin?"
"I don't know. I'm just saying that the Manlikin attack didn't point the finger directly at Efreidis. She could plausibly claim to have had nothing to do with it and try her luck again later if it didn't work. Only, that's not what happened, is it? Instead, she charges in using her Vargr abilities, despite knowing they would put a glowing neon sign over her head." Claire shook her head.
"It sounds crazy when you put it like that. But when it's your child, it's not that simple, Dory. You try to think clearly, but emotions get in the way. And she was so close."
"Okay," I agreed. "Let's say she saw her best chance to make Isobron heir to two kingdoms slipping away, and decided to go for it."
I had a similar thought that night, that the first attack had failed, so a second method was being tried. Or that the first was just a feint to get the stairs cleared for the second. And what's wrong with that?
What's wrong with it is that Efreidis didn't need them cleared. She already had a potential avatar in the room with Aiden, and she knew that.
Dory, what are you talking about?
I'm talking about the night a couple weeks ago, when she and Isobron came here to warn us about Eastland's attack on the Senate. They kidnapped the kids so I'd listen to what they had to say, and Efreidis was actually holding Stinky when I got here. So she knows he lives here, and since she had plenty of time to look around before I showed up, she probably knows he shares a room with Aiden. Claire was looking seriously skeeved out, probably at the reminder of her safe place being violated by the two people she hated most in the world, and of Isobron actually having his hands on Aiden, which, yeah. But she got it together quickly.
"So they were here. What difference does..."
She suddenly stopped, because Claire is not slow.
"It makes a difference," I told her.
because Afridis could have used Stinky instead. He was in the room with Aiden already, and while he's small, he's strong. All the Dark Fae are. Yet instead of taking over the kid lying a few feet away, she went all the way to the basement for an avatar, one who fought her viciously the whole trip and came close to giving everything away. Why?
Claire didn't say anything, although her jaw had a mulish set to it that I knew only too well. But she also hadn't walked away. She was listening. I held up another finger.
2. The rune.
If the attacker was Afridis, and she thought she was stabbing Aiden, she'd have had Eamsi remove the rune first. You told me yourself. It's her family heirloom. She knows how it works. She couldn't take it off when she and Isubron were here because he'd already decided that his honor wouldn't allow him to kill a child.
Claire scowled. Or he's afraid it would damage his reputation as the great purebred hope.
Maybe, but whatever the cause, he didn't allow it. He was holding Aiden when I showed up. Afridis was holding Stinky. He didn't trust her enough to let her touch him, even then, when they badly wanted our help, because he knew she could remove the rune. Yet after going through so much trouble to get back in here without her son this time, she still doesn't remove it? When she knows Aiden would survive any attack as long as it stayed on his person?
Claire shook her head. She was nervous. She thought Sowinny was the only Varger here. She didn't expect you, Dorina, I mean.
No, she didn't. But I think somebody thousands of years old could handle a few surprises. And Dorina and I didn't start chasing her until after the child was stabbed. Yet Afridis still didn't remove the rune, despite having time, and despite the fact that not doing so rendered the whole trip useless.
Claire frowned some more.
I held up a third finger. 3. She didn't stab Aiden.
The frown deepened.
You know damned well that trolls have lousy eyesight, and that the room was dark, and that Afridis wasn't supposed to know the troll kid was in there because he only arrived that afternoon, and Stinky was snoring up a storm as usual, so the non-snoring kid had to be Aiden, right?
Yes!
I ate some more omelet. It was cold, but still good. I swallowed.
What about the smell?
Claire blinked.
What?
Trolls are used to living in darkness. Those caves that some of them call home are pitch black, much worse than a bedroom with streetlights sifting in. Yet they navigate them just fine.
Claire crossed her arms at me.
I had doctored him. Bulsi, I mean, or whatever we're calling him. I wanted to make sure he didn't get an infection since he still had open wounds. So the room reeked of medicine. Maybe Eamsi got confused.
I stuffed down some toast. Wouldn't have mattered. Dorina woke up at the consoles in an unfamiliar room, and she knew exactly who had been in there, going back hours, what they were and how long they'd stayed, as sure as if she'd watched a film of it. And one of them smelled of medicine, too.
Dorina is a first-level master. Eamsi is not.
I shrugged. So put a bunch of people in the basement and turn off the lights. Then send Eamsi in and ask him who was there when he comes out. I'll bet money he can tell you. Claire didn't say anything. So I worked on finishing up the omelet and toast and fresh fruit and coffee she'd brought me, and was still hungry when I had, because my stomach thinks it's fey. But at least I managed to clean the plate before Claire spoke again.
Okay, now I've got a point.
I leaned back with the rest of my coffee. Okay, shoot.
Dorina.
Her eyes were bright. Not with anger, but with excitement. She thought she had me.
Luis Cesar said that Dorina attacked Afridis as soon as she saw her. Why would she do that if she didn't recognize her?
I shrugged. Maybe because she'd just seen a powerful Vargr attack the consul, and there was a powerful Vargr standing right beside the consul? Or maybe...
Or maybe what?
Or maybe she did recognize her, just not from the attack last night. Maybe she recognized her from the attack here. Claire stared at me.
You just finished telling me that it wasn't her.
No, I said the attack using Imsi wasn't her. But that night, there were two of everything. Two boys, two battles, and two very different attack styles. Why not two attackers? Claire did not like my theory. No, that's not right. Claire hated my theory, and I knew why. I just didn't know what to do about it. Is there a problem? Olfin asked, backing up abruptly when Claire slammed out of the room. He had a phone in his hand, and it was ringing. But instead of answering it, he hit talk and then off without so much as a pause in between, and then smiled sadly at me. My apologies. Reflex. I decided not to ask what that meant. He proffered it to me. It was the house phone. I needed to go get mine from my car, assuming it wasn't buried under half a ton of rubble, that was. A blonde eyebrow raised. Want to tell me about it? It took me a second to realize that he didn't mean the phone.
I have this theory, I told him, while gathering up my mess, that maybe we had more than one attacker here the other night.
But of course. I looked up. No one can hold more than one or perhaps two mannequins at once, he informed me. For each one, then, there was probably a Fey warrior behind it, first creating and then directing it.
Okay, but I was talking about the person running things, the mastermind, which, if we're talking earth magic, makes it look like Efridis or Eastland was behind the first attack.
Why just the first? The king's sister is a well-known Vargr.
Which is why I doubt she'd attack that way.
Both eyebrows went up. That is something to think about.
Yes, but Claire doesn't want to think about it.
I sat on the edge of the bed.
Can't say I blame her.
Olfin took the tray, which won him a raised brow in return. I am not allowed to help? He asked.
I was under the impression that that sort of thing was beneath your dignity.
Some might think so. He agreed gravely. I think you saved our lord's grandson and heir, almost on your own, a few nights ago. While we took more than 3 minutes to wake up and assist. His lips twisted. Perhaps you should carry the sword, and I wear the apron.
I don't wear an apron. Ruins the tough chick look.
He smiled, but it didn't reach his eyes.
You're serious,
I realized. Of course. It is a serious matter.
You're upset about 3 minutes? You guys saved the day.
But Olfin shook his head. Our performance was no less than shameful. I think it is why Radar challenged you. He wished to regain some of his honor. He smiled slightly. You were kind not to make him rue it. It had looked like he was ruining it plenty to me, but I decided to emulate dear old Dad for once and not say so.
He didn't lose any honor, I said instead. Neither did you. Most people would be proud of that response time.
Would you be?
That's different. I was already here.
As we should have been. We should have been sleeping in the halls with our weapons beside us. Instead, we were treating this as a holiday, a chance to enjoy some of the human world without a mission to distract us. And all the while, we knew the risks.
You mean Efridis?
Not just Queen Efridis. There are many at court who would be happy enough had the attack succeeded. Particularly now, with the Ice Prince separating himself from some of his father's eccentricities. Fear of the gods' return was the main obstacle to many people supporting his claim to the combined throne. Now that they have reason to believe he would not follow in his father's footsteps, fewer have cause to prefer a child with mixed blood to one of pure high-born heritage, particularly when times are so troubled, and the child is young and untested, while Prince Isubrand is a renowned warrior. I scowled.
Yeah, that's why Claire left court. Someone killed Aiden's nurse and tried to kill him, so she took him and ran.
He shook his head. A shameful thing. And in the palace.
And still unresolved. That's why Claire wants so badly for Afridis to be behind it all. If she was responsible for the attack here, and if the one at court was caused by someone in her pay, then everything works out nicely. She's under guard, with Cademan sitting on her to make sure she doesn't flit off somewhere and Aiden is safe, or as safe as he's ever likely to get. If not...
If not?
Then anyone could be behind this. Easlin, some of his court, some of your court, somebody else she doesn't even know about yet. It's terrifying.
Only Olfin didn't seem to think so. Because he suddenly grinned. Not another of those solemn smiles that never reached the eyes, but a full-on delighted expression that looked strangely goofy on his serious features. I liked it. I just didn't understand it.
What?
Did you not wonder why it took us so long to respond the other night? He asked me. I shrugged.
I told you. I didn't think it took long at all.
Well, I can assure you that it did. But that was not entirely our fault. We should have already been in the house, it is true. But even from the garden, we should have been here within seconds. Except that we couldn't hear you.
Couldn't hear us?
He shook his head and tapped an elongated ear. We do not usually have that problem. Certainly not with the house being demolished a short distance away, and with the princess screaming out of her bedroom window.
Claire was screaming?
I hadn't noticed, but then I'd been getting the ever-loving crap kicked out of me at the time. He nodded. She was apparently quite loud, yet we did not hear. Our best guess is that a silence spell, and a strong one, was put on the house prior to the attack.
Can the Fae do that?
Oh, yes. So can human mages.
I frowned. That doesn't narrow the field any, Olfin.
No, it does not. But that was not my intention with my story.
Sorry, I said. Go on.
I thought you might wonder how our princess managed to get our attention. He was back to deadpan, so I knew this was going to be good.
Yes, I would be quite interested in knowing that.
She set our tents on fire. I burst out laughing.
What?
He nodded. From the house. I awoke to a burning hellscape, and dragonfire is not easily doused. I shan't soon forget it. I guess not.
So where are you sleeping now?
She informed us that we could sleep inside from now on, or out in the elements. She cared not. But that we were forbidden to acquire new tents, since they appear to affect our hearing. He hoisted the tray. I rather pity anyone foolish enough to come after the little prince. From your lips to God's ears, I thought. And then, as he started to turn away, the phone rang. He sighed deeply. I almost forgot.
Forgot what?
My reason for disturbing you. The guards would collectively like to know if you can please stop him from calling. We sleep inside now, in shifts, and, well... He grimaced. It must be 50 times today.
Get who to stop calling? I asked, and looked at the phone.
And saw the name on the little view screen.
You have got to be kidding me!
Chapter 53.
I stabbed Talk.
Go to hell, I told the phone.
Dory?
Kit Marlowe's voice came booming out of the speaker like it was in surround sound.
Is that you?
Yes. Do you have something to say to me?
Naturally. Why else would I be calling?
I hung up. He rang back immediately because of course he did. Vamps didn't need speed dial. They had speed fingers.
Damn it. Don't hang up on me.
Then say the magic words.
What magic words? What are you talking about?
I hung up. I put the phone on silent mode, pulled on jeans and a black tee, and headed downstairs. My butt vibrated. I sighed, took the phone out, and held it a good distance from my ear.
What? Don't hang up on me again.
I hung up because I don't take orders from him. The kitchen was full of Faye again, including Radar, who was rolling out dough like a machine. He'd been the one with the sad, lumpy effort last time, but things had clearly turned around.
Damn, I said,
and meant it.
He looked up and froze. His face twitched around for a moment, like it wasn't sure what expression it was going for, and then slowly it resolved into not a scowl. It wasn't a smile, but it wasn't a frown either.
I was ordered to assist,
he informed me stiffly in case I got any ideas. It's impressive.
You cannot do this.
Never had the knack. He did smile that time, rather superiorly.
It's in the wrists.
It looks good, I said, because it did. And so did the hand pies on trays stacked literally everywhere. Apple? I asked hopefully.
And cherry.
God damn!
Ring, ring, ring.
Sod it all, Marlowe yelled. What the hell do you want?
I already told you. I know it's unfamiliar territory, but you'll get it. I have faith in you.
This is ridiculous. I don't have time for...
Click. I went over to the small stretch of counter by the stove to help Gessa make sandwiches and ended up getting handed a bucket of boiled eggs. It looked like we were all having sandwiches for dinner, and Gessa was putting some of each kind on the boys' tray as she finished with them. I pointed out that it probably didn't matter. He hadn't seemed picky to me, and she nodded, but then kept doing it anyway.
Slavers feed gruel,
she told me after a minute. Okay.
Back in Ferry, also eat gruel.
Her eyes darkened.
And anything else.
Ah. And now you're having fun feeding him all kinds of different tastes he's never had before. She didn't answer, but looking at the determined slant of her chin, I didn't think I had to worry about the kid going hungry. We'll add some hand pies, too, I told her, and she smiled. My butt cheek did the mambo again, and I considered throwing the phone out the door. But it didn't belong to me, and besides, that wouldn't make the asshole go away. That would make him come down here, and then I might have to murder him.
What? All right, I'm sorry.
It sounded like the last word got caught on something in Marlowe's throat, probably his overweening pride. What was that? I couldn't quite hear you.
You heard me. I'm tired of playing these stupid games. I need...
Click. I mushed up maybe 3 dozen eggs in one of Claire's huge mixing bowls, added half a jar of mayo, some salt and pepper, some diced onions, and some Dijon mustard, and made a face after tasting it because it was missing something. Sven, who was stalking the kitchen like he was afraid we'd eat it all, passed me some brown sugar, because he used it on everything. Literally. How he still had teeth, I didn't know. Thanks, but I don't think that'll help. Sven looked like he was going to argue, but Radar intervened. He put a spoon in my mix and sniffed it cautiously before taking a tiny taste on the very tip of his tongue and wrinkled his nose. It's mostly just eggs, I said defensively.
Tasteless eggs.
I could add some pickle relish or some bacon,
Sven perked up at the mention of bacon. He liked to add brown sugar to it while it was cooking to make what was essentially meat candy, so it was always a hit. But Radar disagreed.
Vinegar.
Vinegar? And damned if a splash of the white wine variety didn't help. But not enough.
I could go ask Claire, I said.
But Radar bristled.
We don't need Claire. We can do this.
We all stood around and contemplated the bowl for a minute. Then Gessa finished wrestling a tray of hand pies out of the oven and took a taste, and rolled her eyes at us. She tapped a cabinet with the handle of a wooden spoon, and I opened it to find...
Okay, yeah.
What is that?
Radar demanded, because he was apparently now a chef.
Ambrosia,
I told him, sprinkling a liberal dose over the eggy mix on his spoon. He tried another tiny taste, looking dubious, and then his eyes widened and he ate the whole spoonful. He grabbed the jar before I could dose my own eggs.
What is this?
I told you, ambrosia.
Or smoked paprika, if you're looking for it in the grocery store. He looked like he was making a mental note.
Ring, ring, ring. All right, I'm sorry, I'm sorry, I'm sorry,
Marlowe snapped.
Is that clear enough for you?
I don't know.
I ate some eggs. Those were damned fine eggs. I shared a look of triumph with my co-chefs.
What do you mean you don't know? What more do you want?
I licked my fingers. Normally, an apology comes with a little more than that, like an acknowledgement of guilt. What exactly are you sorry for?
There was a sudden silence on the other end of the line.
Bang, bang,
I prompted, and got an outraged noise in return.
You can't still be upset about that.
Still?
I felt my blood pressure rise.
You shot me! All of a day ago.
I clipped you all of a day ago, he corrected nastily, to slow you down, and you should be grateful.
Grateful?
I had a perfect shot, and that gorilla you were with never even heard me. I could have killed you.
So I should be thanking you?
Apologizing for wasting my time, perhaps.
Click. I was going to tell Luis Cesar about that gorilla comment. I swore to God.
Turn off,
Gessa advised, looking at the phone.
If I do, he'll be here in person.
Ring, ring, ring.
Let me spell it out for you, I snapped at Marlowe. I am done, finished, out of patience, time, and interest in anything to do with you.
This isn't about me. This is about the weapons.
What weapons?
What weapons?
It was approaching screech territory. I pulled the phone away to save my hearing and saw Sven wince. I took the party into the hall because it wasn't fair for everyone to have eardrum damage.
You know damned well what weapons,
Marlowe was yelling.
They couldn't have used all of the ones they took from Radu on the console, not with a single man carrying them, which means the rest are still floating around out there, along with who knows how many others.
And?
And?
And what do you expect me to do about it? I have 50 other things.
Not now. This is priority one.
Not for me.
I made it final.
You're the one with the resources for a job like that. One more person isn't going to help you play hide-and-seek across the city, and I have...
Marlowe cut me off.
I want to know what you know. Everything. Every tiny detail. We're dealing with a ticking time bomb.
Why a time bomb?
I asked, and immediately regretted it. Because I'd forgotten and put the phone back to my ear.
Because that bitch isn't talking,
Marlowe yelled, at front row at a death metal concert decibels.
Even Mircha can't get anything out of her, and whoever was working with her is still at large, leaving us with two very ugly scenarios.
Such as?
Such as I can't talk about this over a phone. There's no telling who's listening.
Everyone, if you keep screaming.
And there's certain terms I don't need showing up in a file somewhere.
But then he told me anyway.
Such as, number one, She was working with loyal Confederates, who are even now tracking down the rest of those damned weapons and smuggling them somewhere we don't need them to be, giving her partisans a war-changing advantage should we ever invade.
Should? I thought that was the plan.
Until last night. But until we find those weapons, it's suicide to even attempt it. No one is willing to send their people in there as things stand.
Okay, I agreed. That's bad.
And number two isn't any better. If her associates aren't loyal, then they are sitting on a trove of power like nothing we have ever seen. Those fights have been going on for decades. They involved thousands of people, especially after Geminis began enlarging and promoting them. There's no telling how much power they currently have.
You think they're going to sell it?
Of course I think they're going to bloody sell it. And while I have people watching the black market, what if they don't go there? What if they decide that instead of selling it off in dribs and drabs and taking a chance on getting caught every time, they just make one big sell? To our enemies, who will fucking use it to fucking end us.
I hated to admit it, but the asshole had a point. All right, I said. But I still don't know what you want me to do. I've been on this for less than a week, and I haven't even been looking for weapons. I've been trying to help Olga.
Save it. I can't talk like this. I'm coming down there.
Damn it, I knew it. I have things to do, I said. I can't just wait around the house all day.
Like hell you can't. I'm leaving now. If you're not there when I arrive, so help me God.
What? You'll shoot me again?
No. It was vicious. I'll make you wish I had.
Click. God damn, I hated that vampire. I found the little troll in the boys' room. The door was open since it was early afternoon, and the guys were off on adventures. But the bed skirt on Aiden's bed was hiked up to give a view of the door and ruffling slightly, like somebody was breathing under there. I sat the tray on the table the boys used for coloring and puzzle doing, got down on my hands and knees, and lifted up the skirt a little more, and found what I'd expected. Two violet eyes, glowing faintly in the dark, a small hunched body, and a smock covered with bacon jam. For a moment, we just looked at each other. I debated trying to fish him out, decided that probably wasn't likely to go well, and brought the platter down instead. I put it on the braided rag rug beside the bed and started looking through the sandwiches on offer. There were two more BLTs, fat and happy-looking, a couple of egg salad, thick and spicy, with a generous sifting of paprika. A couple chicken salad topped with lettuce, tomatoes, and red onion slices. And no fewer than four PBJs. Because you can never have too many PBJs. And just in case that wasn't sufficient, Gessa had stuck a handful of turnovers around the sides like parsley, only not, because trolls don't get the point of garnishes you can't eat. Their idea of how to improve a plate of food is to add more food, which is a hard point to argue with, particularly when they're still warm from the oven and dripping with glaze. "Smells good," I said idly, my own mouth watering a little, because the cinnamon apple and sweet cherry scents were busy battling it out for dominance. I pushed the mounded tray a little closer to the bed, started munching on a turnover, and attempted to look harmless. I guess I succeeded, because after less than a minute, a small, thin arm snaked out and grabbed a cherry pie. It jerked it back under the bed, too far for me to see anything, but I could hear smacking going on. I listened to him inhale a few more turnovers and a couple sandwiches, and then pulled over the paper and crayons that the boys used to design knights and fighter jets and knights piloting fighter jets. Violet eyes peered out at me curiously. I flipped back the rug to get a workspace and fed the kid another sandwich. He took it from my hand this time.
He appeared to like the meat ones best, but he ate them all. Yes, 10 full-sized sandwiches. Or 12, if you counted the two he'd had as an appetizer, along with half a dozen small fruit pies. Trolls had to have a stomach that extended into another dimension. It was the only explanation. Fish, tracks, door, I said clearly, and picked up a blue crayon. I drew a fish. He ate egg salad at it. I drew train tracks, and even got the perspective right. Nothing. I drew a door, complete with a damned good version of a doorknob, if I do say so myself. Nada. I finally sat back and ate a pie. This was starting to look like a waste of time. Well, other than for feeding up the kid. Healing took food, and trolls weren't like humans. Soup wasn't going to put flesh back on those bones. Cherry pie, however, appeared to be a hit. I watched as the rest of the pies and the platter they sat on were slowly pulled under the bedclothes. I finished off my own snack and contemplated my artwork. This was starting to look like a dead end, but like the stuff with Afridis, I just couldn't let it go. The kid didn't know much English, and those weren't survival terms that you'd prioritize. Food, water, bathroom, bed, medicine, help. They looked more like words he'd deliberately tried to pick up, maybe even asked people about, despite the fact that doing so might earn him a beating. But he'd learned them anyway, possibly at different times, so as not to arouse suspicion, and then spoken them on what he thought was his deathbed. Damn it, they meant something. I just didn't know what. Like I didn't know why Dorina had felt it necessary to send me another memory. I had thought the point was the bones, and the fact that people were literally being killed for a potion ingredient. True, one time was vamp bones and the other fey, but the method was similar. Find a vulnerable community, people no one would miss, and exploit the hell out of them. So what was I overlooking? I reclined back against the trundle and rubbed my eyes. Come on, Dory. You're better than this. And normally, I was. Normally, it didn't take somebody hitting me over the head with a clue by four for me to figure out what I was dealing with. Normally, the problem was how to stop it, not how to find it. But this? I wasn't getting this. I'm tired, I thought at Dorina. Why don't you just tell me? Nothing. Damn it, I know you can hear me. Like she could probably hear Mircha last night. Because he didn't get it. Dorina didn't go to sleep anymore. At least, not like she once had. Every mind had to have rest, so there were times she wasn't aware of what was happening, just like me. But there was no way to tell when those were anymore. And she'd been aware enough to attack Afridis when she saw her, hadn't she? So she knew what Mircha was planning. There was a mirror across from the bed, just a little thing hung at kid height. One of Claire's vain attempts to teach good hygiene to a couple boys who were happier splashing about in the mud. I doubted it was used much, but it was there, and in my line of sight when I was sitting down. I caught my reflection in the glass and swallowed. Staring too long into a mirror is always a freaky experience, and that's when you know no one is staring back. I didn't know it now, and for the first time I tried to get a glimpse of my other side. But the black eyes were the same, with no additional life experience that I could see. And so was the too pale skin, the cap of dark hair, still slightly damp from the shower, and the teeth biting a lower lip in indecision. Damn it! I'm not going to do it, I told her. I'm not, okay? That was his idea, not mine. Nothing. He doesn't speak for me. He never has. More nothing. So we were back to not talking, huh? What a shock.
I'm still not, I told her, feeling angry and frustrated and destructive, and mad at myself for it. Trashing the kids' room wasn't going to help, and neither was anything else.